The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
the beast.
We're told in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan.
Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other.
They're here.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the harmonious state of Illinois, I am Derek Gilbert.
I am the wife of the best tenor in the whole wide world, Gilbert.
That is, you're very kind.
Well, honey, truth is truth.
I patently mean. Untrue. I'm no better than seventh at the best. And that's it just in Illinois. So, well, happy to be home again. Was gone for the better part of the weekend.
We missed you very, very much, and I'm glad you're back home safe and sound. Mm. Sound.
Yes. Hello.
Hello, my baby.
Yeah, we...
Sam sang, too.
That was really fun.
I called last night to say hi, and I put him on the phone.
Yeah, and I was in Bloomington, Illinois this weekend, where the Illinois District of the Barbershop Harmony Society had its annual fall convention, which is where quartets from around the state compete for the district quartet championship. And congratulations, by the way, to the winners. The fellows were from Bloomington, so sort of the hometown favorites, a quartet calling itself the Waldorf Hair Company, which is sort of an in-joke. Since all four of the guys are bald. But they sang extremely well. They really did very well. We placed 7th out of 15, which for our first effort was respectable.
Been practicing for 8 weeks.
Yeah, we had hoped for better, but, mm-hmm. Truth be told, even if we had sung at our best, and you never do when you go out into a setting like that, you step mm-hmm. out on stage and you got those lights in your eyes. And then you've got two tables full of judges sitting down in front of you. And those are the only people you can see because the lights really prevent you from seeing the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And you start singing and you get, like two lines into the song and you hit a chord and suddenly six heads go down and you see people start writing and you start thinking, oh, no, what did I just do? And that can really throw you off if you're not really prepared mm-hmm. for it. So. We actually thought we did better on our first night, Friday night, which was the preliminary round, and then the top 10 advanced to the finals. Well, we made the cut, and we were very pleased about that. But we thought we did better on Friday night than on Saturday, which wasn't how it scored. But where was I starting here?
Well, honey, you're already better than the Chicago Bears tonight.
Yeah, that's true. Or the St. Louis Rams. Or the Colts. All the teams we've sort of followed over the course of our. But anyway, it was a wonderful weekend. We were together with the quartet afterwards last night, just sort of relaxing. And I called home and put Sharon on the speakerphone so Sam could sing for the quartet, which he did. And they appreciated that. Says Sam is a sort of semi-official mascot. And Jeff's four dogs. He's got his own quartet at home.
Can they sing, though?
Well,
not like Sam.
Not like Sam. No, they don't, actually. So,
I'm glad you're home safe and sound, honey.
And we do have to congratulate the our very own from the Coles County Chorus, the Coles County Connection, who are the novice quartet champions.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Now, they were also the only novice quartet in the competition. But having said that, meant that these guys were the only fellas in the state this year, new quartet, guys who had enough courage to get up on stage for the very first time in that setting and go out there. So anyway, this is a hobby that I've pursued for over 30 years. And one thing I want to mention, because it really struck me and it was very moving. The quartet, the 2010 quartet champions, four young guys, also from Bloomington, by the way, called After Hours. It's traditional that the outgoing champion quartet will sing sort of a swan song set. And they sang a couple of songs, and then they concluded by saying, we'd like to do this in respect for another quartet they named, which they respect a great deal, and said this is something that they try to live out. They keep their hobby in perspective. And so we'd like for our final song as your champions to perform this arrangement of beautiful Savior. Now, this is a secular society. This is not a religious society, but they performed the most beautiful arrangement of Beautiful Savior. Did the first two verses, key change into the third verse, the curtains open, and the 100-man Bloomington Sound of Illinois chorus, our current district champion chorus, join in and conclude with the third verse. It was absolutely...
Oh, my goodness. That is one of the most beautiful songs.
Yeah, yeah. So
anyway,
we have that chart, and ring time, we'll be learning that that song.
Oh, good, so, good. By the way, if you are not, if you haven't yet liked the Ringtime Quartet fan page, go right over there, and that way you'll see the feed for what they're doing. They sometimes post little clips from what they've practiced. Sometimes they post pictures and, I don't know, news.
Videos, news. Yeah, in fact, I posted a link, just posted before the show tonight, a link to the score sheet so you can see how we scored. Our average score runs, and it's in a 100-point scale, and we averaged about just a shade under 68%, which...
I think you're 129. 0.7.
Well, we'll take million. That score.
1,000 infinity.
So anyway...
Lot, honey. 12T.
So anyway, it's a wonderful weekend. It's a wonderful hobby, but the group that we sing with, we're very blessed that the director of our chorus is a wonderful, wonderful man. And his son is one of the fellows in our quartet. So a great group, and we're blessed. So anyway, some things that are going on around the world this weekend as we record this on September the 25th of 2011.
Yes, indeed. Tomorrow it's a Sunday. And of course, jumped right in there.
That's all right. Tomorrow's
the Security Council meeting.
A rather historic day. The UN Security Council gets together to meet to discuss the United Nations bid by the Palestinian Authority. And there are some questions here about this that come to my mind. You probably have thought about this too. I mean, for one thing, Mahmoud Abbas, what real authority does he have?
He's not really the president anymore, or whatever they call him, because his term of office, I think, ended either last year or the year before.
Being spun in the media, or at least I've seen a couple of stories now that make reference to Mahmoud Abbas, the president of the Palestinian Authority, and how he has emerged from the shadow of Yasser Arafat through this this application for statehood. If Arafat, who was arguably the most visible Palestinian leader ever, if not most powerful, couldn't push through an application at the United Nations for statehood, how has Mahmoud Abbas been able to do it when, by all accounts that I've read, and I'm certainly not an expert on Israeli-Palestinian affairs, but by every account that I've read, Mahmoud Abbas only controls the West Bank, and not even that very tightly. I mean, Gaza Strip is essentially under the control of Hamas, which does not really recognize his authority, as I understand.
No, that's true. And I think that we could take a look at this geopolitically and dissect it and say, okay, well, this person did this at this time, and the reason for this is because these countries are mad at Israel at this. Well, everybody's mad at Israel at some point or another. But ultimately, the answer is because this is God's timing.
Mm-hmm.
This is when he wants the cup of trembling to be served to the United Nations.
Hmm. Well, yeah, clearly there's something going on that transcend the physical realm. I'm just looking up, where in the next elections are supposed to take place in the Palestinian National Authority. Mahmoud Abbas took the office in 2005, but I don't know when his next election is supposed to take place. So anyway, the Security Council will discuss this tomorrow.
That. So anyway.
Oh well.
Well, anyway.
This will be a very interesting day, Monday the 28th.
Well,
I'm sorry, Monday the 26th.
There are so many reasons to go there because beginning, I think, on the 27th. Is Rosh Hashanah. It's over a period of days, and it all depends on when in there the new moon is sighted. And I know that across the world that Jews celebrate Rosh Hashanah. It's the new year for Jewish those of Jewish belief, it is said to be the day that Adam and Eve were created. Well, that Adam, at the very least, was created. It's said to be the day that Jesus Christ was born on Rosh Hashanah. Now, the year that, Michael Heiser has hypothesized, that was Rosh Hashanah that year.
Right. It was September 11th
yes,
of 3 BC.
Yes, remember, this is
the
sighting of the new moon. And so it you don't know the day or the hour when this is going to occur. And there are many people who believe, many scholars who believe that Rosh Hashanah is when the rapture of the church will take place. It's the Feast of Trumpets. It's the time when a door is opened that is only opened at that time of year. It is at a time when there are 99 successions of short trumpet blasts, and then there's one long blast that is called the Trump of God. So I believe that this very well could be the time when the church is raptured. So I don't think it's coincidental that we find Israel essentially being served up as a cup of trembling to the nations. He's taken it to the United Nations and said, you're going to have to make a decision on what we do with Israel. And Abbas made it very clear in his speech to the UN that, honestly, he doesn't want any Jews left. He said, we want all of our enemies gone from our soil.
And Benjamin Netanyahu, in his sort of rebuttal speech before the UN this past week, was very clear in pointing that out. That when he says, you know, enemies, what he essentially means is a Jewish state that is free of Jews.
Yes, that's exactly what he meant.
Yeah. So the United States, where is the United States going to fall on this? The U.S. has been pushing for the Palestinians to hold off on its bid. Will the United States veto this in the Security Council? And if so, what are the implications then from the Muslim world?
You know, it's a really good question. I don't know that a decision will be reached tomorrow. It could be that it takes them several days of deliberation. They may have people come in and make presentations. Don't know how this works, but I do know that we've got three choices, either yay, nay, or abstain. Abstain, of course, is the weaselly way out, but that may be the way to do it, to essentially say, we're going to table this. We don't want to vote on this now. We're going to table this because in the background of the quartet has come in and said, you know what, if you don't make a decision on this, if we haven't had a resolution during this Security Council meeting, then we will spend the next year trying to work it out as the quartet, trying to arrive at a peace treaty. If we can't come up with something, then, as I understand it, it may automatically default to you guys are members a year from now. Now, when they say you guys are members, it could be that the you guys are members in the non-voting,
observer sense.
Yeah. But I don't know what, it surely isn't that, because they could get that today.
And
all they
not,
have
and
to do is go
want.
To the General Assembly body. They don't have to go to the Security Council for that.
Yeah, and that's not what they want. They want to be recognized as an independent state by the United Nations.
Well, I challenge anybody listening to this right now to pull out your Google Earth and take a look on it and type in Israel, and you will see the way that the lines are drawn, that where they show Palestine.
On Google Earth, there is no Israel.
Well, there is an Israel, but it's the way they want it done now.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, the 67 borders.
Yes.
Yeah.
In fact, Abbas doesn't want the 67 borders. He wants to go back to the 47 borders, which is a deal that was offered to them in 1947. And whoever was in charge at the time, I don't think it was Yasser Arafat, or someone else was in charge at the time, and Yasser Arafat was probably like 20 years old at the time. He may have been there. I don't know. But anyway, Ringo Starr is filling in for him now.
Oh, he does have that same kind of beard look, doesn't he?
I tell you, they look alike. At the time, the Palestinian Authority did not give an answer. They simply refused to give an answer. And at that time, they were offered essentially what they're asking for now. Well, the next day, after not giving an answer, they started a war with Israel. They wanted it all.
Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it was Haj Amin al-Husseini was the Grand Mufti of in Jerusalem at that time, I think.
You know, I've just started reading on this. I want to know exactly what the background on this is. Assuming that we've got time, for all I know, we'll be out of here this week. But trying to here's the way it works. The United Nations was founded in 1947 or 48. And, I think it was 47. Mm-hmm. And the League of Nations was founded in what, 1914?
I think that's right.
And the League of Nations is the one at the end of World War One, when the Ottoman Empire was kaput. All of the property belonging to the Ottoman Empire was divvied up. And what's called Southern Syria region was given over in a mandate to Great Britain to take to watch over. Northern Syria was given to France.
Okay.
And at the time that the United Nations was established, my understanding is that anything that was a mandate, any decisions that were made by the League of Nations was adopted into the UN, and they said they wouldn't change it. So if you go back to the League of Nations, according to what the UN said at the time, anything that went back then, if that has not been changed, that language hasn't been changed, then it could be that that's where it's all going to go come down to, because that is the it was the League of Nations mandate this 1947 war was about. So you got to understand everything that came up until then. So early 20th century stuff is very, very important, which is why I started reading on it the other day. And of course, I can't remember any of it because it's falling out my ears as I speak. Come here. Get back.
So a lot of the fallout in the Middle East,
in my ears.
Yeah, well, the political fallout that we're dealing with today is a result of British or Western, you know, French and other nations interference in that region following the breakup of the Ottoman Empire.
You know, you and I were talking earlier about history. And how we are taught these facts and figures. Mm-hmm. Here's a person. Here's what he did. Here's when he did it. Here's a woman. Here's what she did. Here's when she did it. And not a whole lot more about them. Maybe three or four things that we're supposed to understand. And that's all. Mm-hmm. You essentially, even though we didn't call it that, we were taught to the test. Can you pass the test when I give it to you at the end of this semester?
Right.
Recently, we've been watching Empires, which is an interesting PBS series of documentaries. We watched, I don't know if you've seen it all the way through, the Medici family.
Was this PBS or was this some independent?
PBS.
Okay, all right.
PBS. At least that's the big graphic that comes up at the beginning of it.
Oh, okay.
I finished watching the Medici family, and I started watching one about Martin Luther last night. And it's incredible what his life was like just growing up. He grew up in a town that was literally plagued by the plague, and watched many of his boyhood friends die, family members die. The things that people throughout history, they're just like you and I are.
Yeah.
Shock.
Flawed, imperfect.
Yes.
Irritable, cranky.
So when you have someone come up to you and say, well, here are the five items that all of this is based on, it's so much more complicated than that.
Yeah. Martin Luther, for example, was a much more complex character than he's portrayed to be. And one thing I found that was really interesting when I was teaching a course on the history, well, on the teaching a Sunday school class on the Christian foundations of America, which I would revise now based on things that I've learned since then. But essentially, when you look at what led the original pilgrims to land at Plymouth.
Mm-hmm.
It really was John Wycliffe who had much more to do with that strain of Protestantism than Martin Luther.
I think that's true.
Yeah, and you know, because Wycliffe, the main difference between the two was that Wycliffe just wanted, you know, Martin Luther wanted to reform and fix the church hierarchy. Mm-hmm. He wanted to get rid the church of corruption, and that was his first and foremost goal. At least originally, Wycliffe wanted to junk the hierarchy altogether and say, look, we don't need intermediaries or intercessors between us and God, except for Jesus Christ, Christ alone. So some differences there. And that was the strain of Protestantism that first landed here on these shores from Europe. So big differences there. But most of us have forgotten or were never taught.
Well, that's just
a lot of this history.
If you know, it's that old, those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it.
Right,
I'll
exactly.
I'll just keep repeating that until I get it. Well,
but that's a very interesting observation, because as we talked many times on PID Radio and A View from the Bunker about Dominion theology and Kingdom Now theology, these new apostles want to set themselves up as a new church hierarchy and a new political hierarchy here on Earth. They essentially want to recreate the very type of hierarchy that John Wycliffe wanted to eliminate in the 14th century.
Mm-hmm.
We need a church hierarchy, a government of God on planet Earth. That is what these supposed evangelical Protestant Christians in America want to recreate.
There is nothing
bizarre?
New under the sun.
Yeah, it is. And because most are unaware of this history, or don't think deeply enough on the parallels, they are willing, as Dr. Oral Steinkamp pointed out in the parable published at the Heroscope blog a couple of weeks ago, to not think any more deeply about the issue than, well, these folks are opposed to abortion and gay marriage, so they must be all right.
Well, yeah, we're continuing. We'll take a slight left turn here. Continuing to keep an eye on the Glenn Beck show and you know, pray for him. Pray for Glenn Beck. Pray for people who have big pulpits, you know, big megaphones, like Glenn Beck, like Oprah Winfrey. These are people who can influence millions of viewers.
Well, like Rick Warren.
Yes. I wish he would get back on the straight and narrow.
Yeah. And another fellow who just popped up in the news this past week, because it was announced and the story broke by Apprising Ministries, Ken Silva, that Rob Bell, the founding pastor of the Mars Hill Church in Michigan, who wrote the book Love Wins, which questions the existence of hell, has announced that he's resigning from the church he created in order to take his message to a broader audience.
Well, Love Wins was pretty broad.
Yeah, but it's kind of
no hell.
Well, but I think he's thinking broader in terms of media opportunities. Because,
oh, sure.
Yeah, because, you know, when you got to be a church
because
preaching every Sunday morning.
That's a tasty little message for the media.
Well, it is.
They don't want to hear about Jesus Christ, a cross, and blood.
Mm-hmm. And I thought it was really, really interesting that a fairly liberal political commentator, Martin Bashir of MSNBC, really took him to task over this and said, look, you can't have it both ways. I mean, if you're a Christian and you're, you know, how can you, you know, say you're Christian and still, you know, that was essentially the tone of the interview.
What? You're
really
neither
grilled,
hot nor cold.
Yeah. He really grilled Rob Bell over that. But so anyway, interesting. And Rick Warren, interestingly enough, on Twitter, fired off some tweets, or whoever's tweeting for Rick Warren, fired off some tweets that seem directed at Rob Bell, that pastors who seek this sort of broad approval but don't have a church base that holds them accountable have no credibility. Said that was pretty direct in his tweets. These were posted on Friday, I believe.
Well,
Tuesday or Friday.
I have to say, if that's what he wrote, if that's what he tweeted, then good on him for that, because that's true. You do need accountability. You and I need accountability,
right.
And I got to tell you, we get it, because we get emails from people that hear us say things or
right.
You know, rewrite things that if they are not in line with Scripture, we get told about it. And thank you for doing that, because you got to keep us accountable.
Yeah,
that's one part of the fellowshipping aspect of being in a church together, and because we are in a virtual church meeting when we have these radio broadcasts, we need the virtual accountability. Send us an email. Send us call us on the phone. Call us names. Buy us lunch.
send daylight donuts. No.
Please.
And that is truth. And but having said that, you know, I truly wish that Saddleback Church would hold Pastor Warren accountable for bringing guys who practice Eastern mysticism in for his, Daniel plan.
Well, I know that. And here's the problem. When you have a church that there comes a point where, a tipping point where your church can no longer and will no longer do that, because all of the really good people, the people who are on the straight and narrow, they've left.
Yeah.
And so you have... Honestly, if you have a church that constantly feeds milk to the parishioners, if you're not getting good meat, good foundational teaching and just sweets and candy all the time, then you don't have people with the discernment to know if you're on the straight and narrow or not.
Right. Yeah. A church should never be a cult of personality.
No.
Dedicated to its leader. And a lot of mega churches are.
You know, just recently I was talking to you about, which letter is it where Paul is talking about, to the Thessalonians? I think maybe it's First Thessalonians where he's saying, talking about these super apostles who've come in to steal his thunder, so to speak. And he says, okay, I just call me a fool, but I've been shipwrecked this many times. I've been beaten this many times. And he starts listing essentially his resume.
Mm-hmm.
What makes him a more super apostle than they?
Yeah.
And he keeps saying, and I love it, the poetic language of, well, no, I'm just a fool. Remember that. Just a fool saying these things.
No, 1 Corinthians 9.
Sorry, yeah. 1 Corinthians.
Am I not free? Am I not an apostle? Have I not seen Jesus our Lord? Are you not my workmanship in the Lord? If to others I'm not an apostle, at least I am to you, for you are the seal of my apostleship in the Lord. And he goes on from there.
Had to have been very frustrating for him.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. You know, here he was in prison, in chains, trying to write these letters, hearing back from, when people would come in and they'd say, you wouldn't believe what's going on in Thessalonica right now.
No, actually, you may be right. I'm looking at this while you're talking, and forgive me while I'm trying to read while you're doing this.
Well, that's okay. Go right ahead.
That may be a different different book. But yeah, I know he has had to Paul had to present his credentials a couple of times, was. Is sometimes very direct with the people who received his letters.
So much so that Nicole used to call him.
Mr. Furious, which is a reference to a...
Mystery Men.
Yeah, Mystery Men, a film that didn't get much attention. Not a great movie, but that was kind of one of the characters from the film, Mr. Furious. I think we were reading Galatians. I mean, you foolish Galatians, have you been so easily deceived? Mr. Furious. Yeah. He got in their face. He was not, but he praised the church at Berea for not taking everything he said as gospel and examining the scriptures to see if what he said was so. And so we should, all do that. And by all means,
don't take what we say as gospel.
Correct.
And that's just it. Yeah, I've been doing the reading through the Bible in 90 days. And honestly, I don't stick to it perfectly every day because some days I'm too tired. So some days I'm too lazy. Other days I get distracted. Squirrel. And I get distracted sometimes actually in the word. I will get caught on a phrase and I just have to dig in there and dig in there and dig in there. And like Sam or, whatever, when he's trying to find a mole outside and there's no mole in here. And I end up, suddenly 2 hours have gone by and I have not gained any more traction on what I am supposed to be reading for the day. I highly recommend following some kind of a reading program. Get into the Word, because if you do not know what's in there, how can you know when you hear an error?
Right. It's a phrase I've heard before. Christians don't display enough righteous anger, but sadly, most of us don't know what we should be angry about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if we're not in the Word. So, I've been doing the, read through the Bible in a year plan. Mm-hmm.
A lot of people do, and I used to do that all the time.
But right now I'm only up through the third week of July, so I'm a couple of months
behind. That's okay. Yeah. At least you're reading. I mean, there are many, many people who can honestly say, I've got one at home. I'm pretty sure I know what's in there. Have you read it? Well,
And that's how I was.
Memorized a couple of verses,
in Sunday school. And that's how I was into my 30s. And it was not until I actually opened the Bible and began reading. It's like, there's stuff in here I didn't realize was it. And the stuff that I thought was in here, I thought Jesus was love and it was all good. Well, no, not so much. I need to, the burden is actually, it's light, but it's requires more responsibility from us at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Because There's no set of rules that you have to follow, which is a burden. But on the other hand, you really have to stop and then examine how you're living and what you're doing each day. Is this radio show I'm listening to really consistent with a Christian walk? And the commands in Bible to in Scripture to think on good things and not engage in vulgar discourse. These guys make me laugh, but it's crude and not really, it's not consistent with a Christian walk. Can I read these things or watch these kind of television shows or movies? Because it's leading my thoughts in directions that are not consistent with the way a man is supposed to behave toward his, to mm-hmm. his wife, the faithfulness mm-hmm. that a man is supposed to show to his wife. So you have to think about those things on your own instead of just following a list of rules that says, you can't, wear your hair long, or you can't, wear pants, or you can't, whatever those rules happen to be. You can't drink on Sunday, whatever. Those are created by men. Mm-hmm. You read Scripture, find out how freeing the gospel really is, but also you understand that there's a responsibility, that once you understand these things, once you accept Jesus Christ as Lord, then you have a responsibility to try to live, to produce the fruit that comes from a genuine conversion.
Mm-hmm. The closest that I can come to it on earth is when you go off to college.
Yeah.
You spent your 18 years under your parents' roof, and they're going to drive you to the campus, or you get to drive yourself. But anyway, you left that first day alone.
Mm-hmm.
What do? I could do anything. They can't see me.
Yeah. My freshman year in 1980, apparently our class at the school I attended had sort of like a record low as far as midterm grades, especially among the men, because the fraternities were busy rushing the men, the freshman mm-hmm. men, which meant free beer 5 nights a week. So, sadly did my best to develop a tolerance to my brewer's yeast allergy in college.
Lord gave you that allergy for his reasons.
Yes. Yes, he did.
He did.
So anyway, that's a little side observation there and on where the word takes you and what responsibilities it places on you once you read.
So get in there, dig in there. October 1st, if we're all still here, I will be starting that up again. And I just pray that you will join me. Mm-hmm. You can find me posting those daily readings at Facebook and on my Twitter site, Sharon K. Gilbert.
So elsewhere around the world, we have been told by President Obama at his speech before the United Nations, and I was listening to audio of it while I was driving earlier this week, and it actually made me laugh out loud. He talked about how Mubarak is gone, Ben Ami is gone, the regime of Gaddafi is over, and Bin Laden is dead. And with him, and this was what made me laugh, and with him, the idea that change can only be accomplished through violence. I'm like,
he literally said that?
Yeah, now it's a paraphrase, but that was his point, that with Bin Laden died the idea that change can only be achieved through violent action. And I thought, okay, after I laughed, why then have we dropped tens of thousands of bombs, NATO, that is, on Libya? Why are we executing drone strikes in...
Did you say through violent or nonviolent?
Through violent action. Because, we killed, and this is
Obama speaking. Oh, I thought you were talking about the grassroots people.
Obama saying, that because we've killed Osama bin Laden... With him died the idea that change can only be accomplished through violent action. And I thought, okay, so how exactly again did we remove Gaddafi from power?
So is he worshiping a god of fortresses now?
He might be. So anyway, I thought that was rather amusing in a morbid kind of way, because a lot of people have died. I mean, we were literally talking tens of thousands of bombs that have been dropped in Libya. And I'm not making this figure up or pulling it out of the air. I don't have a citation for it exactly. There was a reference I saw in the news about a month, 6 weeks after we initially went in back in March, that Canada alone had dropped, several thousand bombs
they don't have any bombs.
Libya. Apparently they used them all up in Libya somewhere. But according to Debka, Muammar Gaddafi, who didn't survive 40 plus years at the helm of Libya by being stupid, has apparently signed or come to some sort of an agreement with a tribe called the Tuareg, which, interestingly enough, was a name that Volkswagen applied to its minivan a couple of years ago, the Tuareg.
Yes, I knew that sounded familiar.
Yeah, it's a tribe that basically roams the Sahara and does not recognize national borders. They basically roam through five different nations in the Sahara, eastern Algeria, eastern Mali, western Niger, northern Burkina Faso, and southern Libya. And they are independent of all five of those national governments. They are renowned, according to Debga, as crack desert special ops fighters who can subsist on 100 grams of dried dates and a half liter of water for 24 hours while covering 100 kilometers, or about 60 miles, on foot. Apparently, they don't need to carry water because they know where all the hidden springs are in the Sahara. This is a, and apparently, they've got about 12,000 men who can carry weapons. And they have come to some sort of an agreement with Gaddafi, who has assured his forces and top officials through this agreement of safety of movement through all five of these African nations now. So Gaddafi now could wind up in Mali, in Niger, which is reportedly where he had escaped, through, you know, Burkina Faso, Algeria. He basically has free movement now through all five of these nations to continue his guerrilla war.
Oh, my goodness.
Against NATO. So while we're hearing these NATO forces have done this, or not NATO forces, because we're told through the media that it's actually the Transitional National Council that's achieved all these victories.
No.
Contrary to reports that it's actually British and French special operations forces, that Gaddafi has got at least 12,000, perhaps more, fighters now at his command to continue a long-running guerrilla war against whoever NATO sets up in Libya. And unless NATO then is willing to go in and attack Mali and Niger and Burkina Faso and Algeria,
NATO set someone up because that transitional government has been recognized, has it not, by the UN?
I believe you're right. So
if it's been recognized by the UN, doesn't that not make them legitimate? Therefore, they can elect their own. She says that knowing good and well that NATO will still be involved.
No twink, wink. Yeah, the U.S. recognized the Transitional National Council in July as the
I thought the UN
government.
Did it the first day that they met in this month.
Let's see.
Well, we can look that up later.
Yeah. So anyway, it seems that things are not quite as settled in Libya as they were, and also growing more and more unsettled between the United States and Pakistan.
Nobody likes us right now. Nobody.
Well, the Pakistanis still haven't gotten over the raid that killed Osama bin Laden, and I guess from their perspective, I could understand why. I mean, if, and we've used this as an example before, but if the Mexican government sent special ops forces into Brownsville and took somebody out on American soil, I think we'd be a little ticked off. So it appears that
They have
Pakistan,
nukes.
And that is something to keep in mind, Pakistan is a nuclear
something
power.
Like 200, 300?
Don't know, but the fact
nuclear.
That they have the bomb. The AQCON network also apparently responsible for, distributing this knowledge throughout the Muslim world. But military sources reporting to Debka that Pakistan appears to be getting ready for a military clash with the United States. They've sent a warning to the U.S. government against hot pursuit of terrorists into Pakistani soil. We've been using drones to go after suspected militants, suspected terrorists on Pakistani soil for years now.
You know, that island that has our drone base, I can't think of the name of it now.
Diego Garcia?
No, another one. That we have ships, airships, planes. Mm-hmm. Yes, those things. Dirigibles. We have those. Zeppelins. A zeppelin! No, it's another island I'd not heard of before. They currently are their whole income, everything that they do, all their jobs are based around this drone base that is there. So they're happy. Lots of jobs have been created by Obama on this island. Hmm. But right now.
Oh, okay. In the Horn of Africa, Ethiopia.
Yes.
Because the Pakistanis basically told us to close down our drone base in Pakistan.
Yes. Everybody's mad at everybody out there. Everybody's mad at us. But Greece is mad at Israel. Israel is mad at Greece. Mm-hmm. Greece is mad at Cyprus. And
Turkey, exactly,
because the Turks have been trying to run the one part of the island of Cyprus, mm-hmm. have been claiming it for, I don't know, like 40 years or something, since the early 70s. And let's see, who else is mad at it? Syria is mad at everybody. Syria is mad at their own people. Mm-hmm. Over 3,000 people have died there.
In Syria?
Yes. Hmm. And we haven't even started bombing yet.
Yeah.
And we will.
Well, you know, what's really interesting is that the noise about Syria seems to have cooled down a little bit over the last
couple
of weeks.
But did you notice a story that came out a few days ago that was released in a very timely fashion? The story about how the bunker busters that Bush refused to sell to Israel mm-hmm. were sold. Right off the bat, in early 2009, shortly after Obama took office, mm-hmm. that was approved. Bush had said no. Obama said yes. Now, why would Obama give Israel a whole bunch of bunker busters? Let's see. What's underground? Who's got something evil underground?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Iran?
Yes.
Perhaps Syria?
Yes. Nuclear plants. Nuclear programs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Perhaps Pakistan.
Possibly so. That would be a stretch to reach from Israel.
That would
Iran, for sure.
You're right.
And we do know that Syria's nuclear plant was taken out by the Israelis a few years back.
The IAEA was supposed to go in and inspect that area a few weeks ago, maybe a month or so ago, and I haven't followed up on that story to see if they have issued their report yet. They were going to go there and determine whether or not, indeed, there had been a nuclear facility there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Because Syria is being made out to be the bad guy right now. Now, I don't think that Assad has any business killing his own people. If they want to leave, they mm-hmm. They should have the option to leave.
That's right.
If they want to demonstrate in the streets, they should be allowed to do that. Just going and killing them is just, he's doing it because
it
worked for his dad.
Sure.
I don't know whether or not they have gone in, but if they were to go in and say, there was one here. How about that?
Hmm.
Syria, you've been lying to us.
You've got some splaining to do. Yeah. What's the big difference with Syria over the Western intervention in Libya, of course, is that Syria has no oil. Syria also has a Russian naval base on the Mediterranean coast, which complicates matters just a little bit.
Yes. And by the way, Putin is going to be.
And that leads to the next story.
Yes. Oh, right. Ding.
Yeah. Now, I thought the Russian Constitution was written so that they, like the United States, the president could serve only so many terms and then that was it.
No, I think you can't serve consecutive ones. I think mm-hmm. you can come back. That's why he came in this time as prime minister. And in the past, it was the prime minister who had the power instead of the president. Hmm. And then a few presidents back, it switched to where the president had the power. And the prime minister was really just sort of a decorative person mm-hmm. that went around and did diplomatic things. Putin has been pretty powerful while he was in. And Medvedev, just even a month or so ago, was still standing and planning to run against Putin because Putin had announced that he was planning to run again.
Yeah.
Or was being encouraged. That's how it was in the press. Everybody wants you to run again. Oh, we love you, Vlad.
Yeah. Vlad, well, talk about cult of personality. What's that group
when
of
when he flexes his muscles, he really flexes his muscles.
Yeah.
Nashi.
The Nashi, right, which mm-hmm. is sort of a... It's maybe not a fair comparison, but I guess the best analog I can come up with off the top of my head is the Hitler Youth.
Yes, I think that is a fair comparison.
It's a youth organization that is devoted essentially to Vladimir Putin.
It's a cult.
Yeah.
And they are they're encouraged. No, they are ordered mm-hmm. to marry each other and have kids. That's why I say I think it is a good comparison to the Hitler Youth.
So anyway, Medvedev, according to the LA Times story posted, today, the 25th of September, has been nominated by Medvedev to serve as president.
Putin, yes. Putin. A couple of days ago, Medvedev said he was going to do that. He was going to nominate him.
Yeah, and under the deal, Putin would nominate or would have Medvedev serve as his prime minister. The finance minister in Russia says he'll quit if Medvedev is the prime minister. He will serve under Putin, but not Medvedev. He disagrees with Medvedev's policies.
Hmm.
Specifically, Medvedev's policies regarding military spending, which this finance minister, Alexei Kudrin, says are threatening their budget stability and making Russia dependent upon high oil prices for financial stability.
So,
this finance minister has been given a lot of the credit for Russia's resurgence and stability, financial stability, over the last 10 years or so.
That's really interesting. You know, I wonder if Bill Clinton will decide to run for office again, and if Tony Blair will decide to run for office again, because Putin was the Russian member of the quartet.
Hmm.
And they weren't singing ballads.
Yeah, not
it's the quartet that's going to continue dealing with this issue for the next year if a decision is not made tomorrow, or at least this week.
Yeah. I don't know. As just an outside observer without real expertise here.
Me neither.
I can just shake my head and say, wow, we're just kind of watching the ride here. It's been pretty clear, I think, that Vladimir Putin has been the real power inside Russia, even though he stepped down from the presidency because of term limits in 2008. Medvedev get a 4-year term, and then Putin will step back in probably for 2 more 4-year terms.
And I think that's why it was done that way, so that essentially Putin can stay in power. You know, I suspect that if the Clintons could have figured out a way to do that.
Yeah. Not.
Instead, we've got the Bush administration 3.
Yes, yes. That is absolutely what Barack Obama represents, which is why so many progressives are upset with him. I mean, he is, I was listening to Dennis Miller this past week, and he was talking about Barack Obama and how disgusted he is with those who continue to play the race card, that anyone who opposes Barack Obama is doing so just because he's a racist, a bigot. Miller said, I think it's cool that we've got an African-American president. He said, frankly, the color of his skin is about the only thing I still like about him right now. But he then went on to say, and one other thing, he gave him props for continuing and extending the Bush policy of going after the terrorists wherever they are, the drone strikes, the whacking Osama bin Laden.
Well, there's a reason why Dennis is welcome on the Fox News Network.
Right, because he buys in. I mean, Dennis Miller's entertaining, but he buys the official story for why we're going after those guys. And, I think a lot of people who believe that what the media is telling us is essentially true reach the same conclusion. I certainly did until I really started looking into it and saying, hey, these things don't add up. The most likely explanation for what's going on here is not the one that we're being fed through the major media outlets. So just have to, do your best to be discerning and just use some common sense and not believe everything that we're told. Again,
what?
Not even by us necessarily. We're not deliberately trying to mislead. We're just not always right.
And, I believe everything you tell me.
Well, me too, you.
Because I know you're honest.
Just not always the smartest guy on any particular topic. So anyway, that's what's going on with Lumia, Pakistan. And
you got a little checklist over there.
Yeah, I'm getting better. I'm not writing out like full-fledged outlines like I used to do when we started doing the show.
Well, this is the thing. Very oftentimes I'll look at him because he's, come home from a long day out on the road. And I'll say, okay, if we're going to do a show that evening, which of course we've not. We're doing them on the weekends now. But if you haven't had a chance to look at the news lately, I'll say, okay, I've got this stuff in mind. I'll bring my laptop in there. Just follow me. We'll just run with it. And you and I, we love to talk. So it's no different than if you and I sat down. In fact, when we finish this show in a few minutes, we'll go in there. We'll keep talking.
Mm-hmm.
Keep talking. Whenever you're in charge, very often in the past, you would have voluminous notes. Kudos to you for doing that. But honestly, I'm not that disciplined. I'm more of the seat of my pants kind of gal, you know, and I've had many a donut over the years, so I can fly for a long time. Going that way?
I love you, sweetheart. And one of the things that makes this doing the show enjoyable and makes it go by a lot quicker than I used to think it would. Because, again, we got 60 minutes to fill. How are we going to fill that much time? Once we start, it's so enjoyable for me to talk with you that it goes by really fast. And next thing, I look up at the clock. It's like, oh, okay, we're into 50 minutes already on the show. So
it's amazing, isn't it? Part of that is coming from radio the way you do. I mean, honestly, with all the breaks and the things. If you can give a guest 3 minutes, that's a long time. So thinking about an hour, okay, let's see, 2-3 minutes per topic.
And being able to break the topics up into about 7-minute increments, because the way most talk radio stations are formatted, well, you've got a 6-minute block at the top of the hour, you've got another 5 minutes at the bottom of the hour that you're going to fill with news, traffic, weather information people would find useful, and then you've got to find spots for other commercial breaks, usually another 6 minutes on either side, either half hour. So you got 12 minutes there, 18 minutes, 23 minutes. So by the time you get done with that, actually you only need to fill about 37 minutes out of an hour with your own content. It's just doing it in 7-minute bites in a way that makes sense. When you're doing what we do, which is essentially stream of consciousness for an hour, it's actually a little easier.
It's blather, honey. Be honest. It's blather.
It's actually a little easier. So it's turned out to be I don't stress about, having the stuff lined up as much as I used to.
I know. I'm so proud of you.
The other thing that I think we need to look at, and I just want to touch on this, without drifting into alarmism, because I'll say again, I'm not an expert on this topic. I do try to watch and read a little bit on it, but the economic prognosticators, for the most part, could be reading tea leaves as accurate as they are.
I think you can bet on one thing, and it's not going to get better in the long run.
No, we've seen the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which has limited utility as a barometer for the real economy, how it really affects people out here in the heartland, but it's dropped 2,000 points, excuse me, in recent weeks. It was at about a 12.7, and now it's down about 10,700 thereabouts as of Friday. Rallied slightly on Friday, but a 2,000-point drop out of 12,000 or 13,000, that's, 15-16% drop over the past couple
weeks. A lot of people are cashing out.
Yeah, and I think just that was in large part response to the Federal Reserve's Operation Twist, which is, buying up some bonds and selling off other bonds to try to encourage long-term borrowing. The problem is that interest rates have just been artificially low for way too long, which was essentially giving the economy a sugar rush. Mm-hmm. It's like taking one of those 5-hour energy shots, and you feel great for a while, and then you crash. And we're in the crash period, and they're trying to delay the crash by infusing more sugar into the economic bloodstream.
And it's going to get worse. There was a story out a couple of days ago that you may have seen, and if I remember the number correctly, it was 10 million more mortgages are about to go belly up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're going to have to, as to borrow a phrase from our president, eat our peas at some point. But the banksters are trying to...
Our own legs.
Well, yeah, like cave crickets do. And they run out of food. It's like, okay, well, let's see. This leg I don't really use very often. I get this. Oh, sweet and tasty. Kind of a disgusting habit, but cave crickets actually do that.
They do. I found many a cave cricket with legs missing.
So we're looking at a fourth quarter here as we move into the fourth quarter of the year, October, November, December, where I think we're going to see some real economic distress finally become apparent. The government and the Federal Reserve Bank, and notice I mentioned them separately because the Federal Reserve is a private entity, not technical, it's quasi-governmental at best, have been papering over the cracks in the American economy. They can only do that for so long. I'll say again, Vox Dei, I think, one of the few Austrian economists in general, I've been among the few economists who have pointed this out, that the credit is the thing. And the only reason the American economy, the only reason the stock market hasn't collapse might be too strong a word, but
contracted,
that was the word I was looking for. Thank you. Contracted more than it has is that the contraction in the financial sector's credit and the contraction in consumer credit, because folks like you and me are paying down our debts, we're paying off our cars, we're getting rid of credit cards.
Buying at Goodwill.
Buying at Goodwill instead of putting things on credit card to buy new at, you know, buy new. Mm-hmm. Those contractions in those areas of credit have been offset by expansion in government credit. The government is borrowing more money and spending more money on alleged stimulus plans, and that's offsetting the contraction in what banks are lending and what consumers are borrowing, what businesses and consumers are borrowing. But in the most recent quarter for which numbers are available, the rate of government borrowing has declined, and the contraction in financial sector borrowing has accelerated, which means that the economy is contracting. Gross domestic product is going to begin to contract, and it's going to become obvious here pretty quickly that this depression, the sugar rush, is finally going to wear off because they've run out of energy drink to pump into the economy.
Yeah. So what does this come down to, you and me? If you've got a job, be grateful.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably not a good time to hop to a different job.
Right.
Or to leave your job thinking I'm going to get a better job down the road. Mm-hmm. Praise God if you've got a job. And I thank the Lord that you have a job.
Yes, yes.
I mean, in this economy and sales, you could easily be on the street.
Well, that's very true. And thankfully, the area in which I serve now and the industry that I serve, the industries that we serve are doing well. So while we're not setting the world afire as far as, you know, breaking sales records, we're able to get close to hitting our targets because the industries that we serve in this part of the country are doing well. And that would be specifically coal mining, agriculture to some extent. Those areas are doing well. There are jobs to be had in Southern Illinois. If you know how to weld, or if you're willing to, and if you know how to, you know, operate a CNC machine, if you're willing to work in a warehouse or factory, you can get work.
Oh yeah.
And in fact, let me just, as a quick aside here, the government keeps talking about the need to create jobs and spending money to create jobs. I would suggest that at least in some parts of the country where there are some jobs to be had that are difficult to fill, it is difficult to fill some of these jobs because the amount of money that employers can pay and still turn a profit for these jobs is only slightly more than what somebody who stays home and collects unemployment can get. And when unemployment benefits have been extended to 99 weeks in some cases, the government, I would suggest, is actually exacerbating the problem of unemployment because
of course
they're making it more attractive for guys and gals to stay home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if the difference between what I earn and what I can collect on unemployment is only a couple $100 a month, that's a pretty powerful incentive for me to stay home for a couple of years.
And here's the thing. Once you get somebody addicted to that little sweet lifestyle, you know, just staying home and collecting the check, and then you pull it away.
It's worse.
It's so much worse.
Exactly. That is, on a grand scale, what the economy is going to go through. Because the government cannot continue to borrow forever. And once that sugar rush, that adrenaline rush, or the sugar rush, rather, wears off, the crash is from a higher place.
Exactly.
And it's a harder fall.
So back down to you and me, and all of you listening. Derek and I talk about how we believe that the church will be raptured. I am pre-trib. We've talked about it. But that aside, we are looking for Christ every day, but we live as if we're going to be here for the rest of our natural lives and live that out.
Right.
You've got to do that. You have to plan as if you're going to be here the whole time, but you have to live as if you're going to leave any moment.
Yeah.
That means that redeeming the time we have. If you have a job, like I say, be grateful for it. Live lean. Learn how to live on less. Learn how to live on less money. And that may mean that you take a little bit every week, and instead of spending your whole paycheck on, you know, let's say you spend $500 a month on groceries, and a lot of families do, try to get by on $400. Can you go to Aldi or someplace like that and maybe spend a little bit less? Is there another place that you can? Can you co-op with a neighborhood, you know, a friend in the neighborhood or someone in your church, and all go to Sam's Club?
Angel Food Ministries.
Angel Food Ministries is a fabulous place to go. You can buy really good food there, and you're paying about, oh, I don't know, maybe two-thirds, three-fourths of what you would normally, and maybe even less in some cases. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of ways to cut back. Pay off your debts. If there's any way that you can get out of debt, do it now. If there's a way that you can pay off your cars, that if you are free and clear of what you have to live, then you're going to be better off when all of this happens.
Yeah.
And if there's a way that you have enough money this week to put a little bit extra away in the pantry, do it. Do mm-hmm. it for your kids.
Mm-hmm.
Because if something were to happen, at the very least, we need to have at least enough to get by for a week or two.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's... Again, not to be alarmist, just to look ahead.
No, these are just, this is the way, you know, that we should be living. We should all be living in a very lean fashion.
Right. And, you know, fact is that things could be wrong. Things could turn around.
And if they do, then we're all better off, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly. These are principles that our ancestors lived by. Grandparents, you know, those who survived, went through the Great Depression, they made it through. And if the Lord tarries, we'll make it through as well. But in large part by learning to reuse and recycle. Heck, they were green, you know, putting patches on tires, filling tires with sawdust or sand or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Skills that they had that in many cases have been lost since then. You know, how to grow our own food and so forth.
What?
But
food?
They made it through, and we will as well. We know from Scripture that the Lord takes care of the birds.
Mm-hmm.
And if we are worth more than sparrows, so we know that the Lord knows what we need, and He will provide. We're very thankful. We have been blessed, and I just pray that you are similarly blessed. And as we go through this, regardless of where the road takes us, that we all learn to lean on His providence. And I know easier said in our circumstance than it may be for you. So I certainly hope this isn't coming across as condescending or talking down to anyone, because it's not intended to be that way.
No, not in any way, shape, or form. And you know what? We love you. We love each and every one of you. Jesus Christ loves you. He bled and died for you. He did indeed. And He wants you to know Him all the better.
Yeah.
If you don't know Him as Savior, please think about it today. All you need to do is accept what He did for you on Calvary. It's a free gift. He paid the price already. It's free to you and me. All we have to do is believe in Him and accept that gift, and the Holy Spirit will come into your heart and begin to change your life. But from that very moment that you accept Christ, your eternity has already changed direction.
And that's the ultimate goal. We know that we're not promised an easy ride in this world. Jesus, in fact, warned us there would be tribulations and trials. And we just want to remind you, if you're not already aware of one friend of ours who is going through some very difficult times right now, and that is David Flynn, who has been interviewed on PID Radio several times. And I'll put links to those interviews in the show notes. If you've not heard the discussions we had with David over the occult translation of the Roswell, 1947 Roswell incident, discussion about the prophecy of Daniel 3:3, and discussion of his book,
The Temple at the Center of Time,
which are just an incredible look at the way Scripture and a glimpse into possible explanations for some of the unexplained things that have occurred on planet Earth in recent history. David is just a very out-of-the-box thinker, incredible mind, and it is that mind that the enemy has attacked. He is suffering from was diagnosed recently with an aggressive brain tumor. He's scheduled for surgery tomorrow, September 26th of 2011. Which will involve a craniotomy. This is very major surgery. The tumor was not diagnosed until it was at nearly terminal size. So this is very serious. And from what we understand, the doctors are being very realistic about the prognosis. So your prayers for David Flynn will be greatly appreciated by him, his family, and those who love him. And we've been honored to call him a friend. We've not spoken with him as much as we would like, but he's been very, very busy in recent years with his research, with his writings. And he's also got some videos that might be available online, presentations that he gave at the Ancient of Days conferences hosted by Guy Malone in years past. And you can look those up as well. But again, your prayers for David Flynn would be most appreciated. Till next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud.